Calling all detectives.
When a small-time crook violated his parole, it started a case that led all the way to the Black Hills of North Dakota. That is the situation on this page from my casebook, the casebook of Jerry Browning, private detective. Take it from me, Jerry Browning, private detective. People have the strangest motives for the strangest deeds.
This court is recessed for 20 minutes.
Silver-haired Judge Rockmore beckoned to me, led the way to his chambers.
Jerry, what's your opinion of this Philip Corley parole violations case?
I shrugged. It's cut and dry, Judge, so far as I'm concerned. Corley has spent the last 4 years in prisons. The chances are the young punk will be in and out of jails for the rest of his life. Judge Rockmore sighed.
Then you don't believe Corley's story, that he didn't realize the men he was with were habitual criminals.
Judge Rockmore, are you kidding? The Blue Kitten's a notorious deadfall and gambling joint. The men Corley was with, Hank Barton, Lefty Monroe, Stan Roman, are among the worst thugs in town. Don't tell me that a man who served 4 years in two prisons doesn't know what kind of men he's associating with.
Judge Rockmore raised a frail hand.
All right, Jerry, all right. Philip Corley is going back to prison for the balance of his 5 to 10 year sentence. Under the Parole Act conditions, I have no choice but to send him back.
It's a good law, Judge. If a parolee hangs around with criminals, he's planning criminal business.
Judge Rockmore stood up.
I don't quarrel with the law, Jerry. Corley may be everything you say he is, but somehow I believe him. Despite all the evidence, I don't think he knew that those men were criminals.
That's fine. Now all I have to do is prove it. When a criminal was returned to prison for violating his parole conditions, I was asked to prove that the violation was unintentional. The first thing I did was have a talk with Philip Corley's parole officer.
I was very much surprised and disappointed, Mr. Browning. Corley had a job. I can't imagine what came over him.
The same thing that comes over all habitual crooks, the itch for easy money. Oh, well, thanks anyway. Maybe I should mention why I was going through the motions of checking on Corley's story. It was because of the respect and admiration I have for Judge Rockmore. And because he's been right about people just often enough for me to keep hoping he'll be right again. That hope took me to Stan Roman's Blue Kitten Bar.
You want to talk to me, Browning? Sure. Anybody can talk to me. Go ahead, talk.
Okay, Stan. What was that young punk Philip Corley doing in here the night he was picked up?
He was throwing his weight around, making like a little man.
You mean he came in here and picked a fight with you and Hank Barton and Lefty Monroe?
Yeah, he did a dilly.
Stan, I've seen you alone break the arm of a man twice your size. And now you're telling me that a 135-pound punk took on not only you, but two other mugs and was alive to be arrested when the cops came in. Stan looked abashed.
Oh, the kid was stag crazy. I didn't want to hit him.
I smiled. Stan, the next thing you'll be telling me is that tigers don't kill. They just scratch a little. Huh? See you around, Stan. I walked to my car, got in, and just sat there. In a fight with Stan Roman, much less two other savage brawlers, Corley shouldn't have lasted 30 seconds. For the first time, it began to look like Judge Rockmore had something. At the office of the Evening Sentinel, I got permission to look through back files. Quickly found the stories on Philip Corley's two convictions. The first one was an attempted stick-up of a branch loan office. Police had been tipped off, were waiting for him, took him easily. Sentence, 1 to 5, paroled after 18 months. 4 weeks later, Corley was back in the news, this time for trying to break into a small department store. A passerby saw him force entry, phoned police, who grabbed Corley as he was rifling the credit manager's desk. Sentence, as a second offender, 5 to 10, paroled after 2.5 years. There it was, the pitiful record of a useless, wasted life. The next morning, I stopped in to see Arnold Lansing, the credit manager at the store Corley tried to burglarize. Lansing was a small, excitable man.
Yes, yes, of course I remember the incident. Of course, of course. Imagine it happening to the same person twice. I was cashier at the Prudent Loan Office 4 years ago when Corley tried to hold it up. The second time here, I wasn't present, but I might have been, I might.
Wait a second, Mr. Lansing. If Corley twice tried to break into places where you were, maybe you two knew each other. The little man's voice went up a few notches.
Me? No, hold up, man. Really, Mr. Browning, really, really.
Don't get excited. I was just asking. Mr. Lansing, when Corley first held you up at the loan company office, how did the police know about it in advance? Lansing stared at me.
I don't know. They had a tip, they said.
Yeah, I suppose they did. Thanks a lot, Mr. Lansing, and don't worry about anything. I went back to Judge Rockmore with what I'd learned.
There's a weird sort of pattern here, Jerry. As though Corley were meant to spend a lifetime in jail.
That's what I thought, too, but you can't force a man to stage two robberies. It doesn't make sense, Judge.
Jerry, get one more piece of information. Find out where that credit manager, Lansing, lived before he came to this city.
Rapid City, North Dakota, Mr. Browning. Rapid City is where I came from and proud of it.
Go to Rapid City, North Dakota, Jerry, and find out all about Lansing and Corley. I will pay your expenses.
Rapid City in the Black Hills of North Dakota is a thriving business community. I learned that Lansing once owned a small gift shop and closed up after paying every dollar of his debts. That's all I learned about him. But I learned plenty about a family named Corley. Judge Rockmore, Philip Corley's father had a gold mine in the hills, and he made a lot of money before he died and left that money for his son in trust with his friend and partner, Stan Roman, the same man who now owns the Blue Kitten.
Jerry, I'm issuing a warrant for Roman's arrest.
Police brought Roman in and uncovered one of the most amazing plots I'd ever encountered. Roman wasn't satisfied just to steal Philip Corley's inheritance. He told the kid a story about another man who'd cheated his father, picked on Lansing because the poor guy had also come from Rapid City. Roman sold the kid the idea of confronting Lansing at gunpoint and then made sure that the police were tipped off in advance. And when Corley was paroled a second time and refused to tangle further with Lansing, Roman lured him to the Blue Kitten and provoked the fight that led to a parole violation conviction. Well, he didn't want young Corley to die, because then Roman might someday have to account to a court for the trust fund. It was a lot easier to make sure that Corley rotted in prison. Well, Roman's there now for a long, long stretch. And Corley has his trust fund and another parole that I don't think he'll ever try to violate. Like I said, a criminal's motives may be deeply hidden, but that's not nearly as deep as he gets put away when you finally dig him out.